Hello, people. Welcome back to another episode. Today I've got Rebecca Lazarou on the show. Now, this episode is on YouTube, so if you want to just head there, watch, I would advise that because it is one hell of a podcast. I'm going to be talking about this one for a while to come and shouting about it. That's how valuable I really believe it to be. So, where to start? This podcast touched on so much, much more than just the science of plants and biomedicine. Rebecca dived into a lot of stuff, which unexpected really. Her level of understanding of certain things, like, well, the simple things really, but also her grounded approach. And what I mean by grounded is her approach and her philosophies are really rooted in what it means to be human, which really align with mine. And we dived into stuff like the nervous system, how our relationship and connection with nature is, I think, so vital to healing. And again, it sounds simple and it sounds like, yes, we know that. However, when it's delivered in a different way, I feel like it's heard in a different way. And we do need to keep reminding ourselves that we are a part of the big whole. And that's what the podcast is centered in, really. How can we reconnect to that whole life approach? So Rebecca also talks about journaling and finding your own medicine, like going out there and really finding things that make you come alive. So it is way more than knowledge and wisdom on plants and why certain plants are medicinal, what plants Rebecca recommends. We explore the relationship between well-being and plants and her role as a plant researcher at Kew Gardens, and also expect to learn what plants aid in healing and to what extent they can be used to assist in healing and health, and also quality control, what brands to look for, etc. We get into all of that in today's episode, which is a good one. If you find it valuable, please head over to Apple Podcasts or really wherever you get your podcasts and write a review. This really helps grow the podcast. If there is a way you want to support, then that is one of them. There are many, that is one. Also, to update you, my men's group has launched online. So if you're curious about finding community and learning, with like-minded men and people that want to combine natural ways of living with self-development, this is men's work. This is really rewriting the story of what we've been told. So if that feels like something you're interested in, then head over to bodymindpractice.co.uk/beinghuman. Links in the description. That is all for now. Hope you enjoy the podcast. And as I said, head over to YouTube if you want to watch it. Thanks for listening, and send this to anyone who you feel would benefit from listening. That also helps grow this platform. Thank you. Speak soon. Since doing a little bit of research and obviously diving into your website, it sparks all sort of questions mainly, but also genuine, you know, genuine feelings of positivity. And like, I see through obviously the lens of the website and the work and the research that you're doing and the interesting topics that you're passionate about, and the kind of story which we'll talk about, the story, this timeline of how it's come to be, it just feels very grounded. And that's the kind of essence of it, where it's always where the thing's coming from is mainly the most important, where something is coming from. I feel so it feels like your work is coming from a real nice place, which I want to chat about more. So but perhaps give us an introduction of, like, maybe I'd love to know the story of how you got into this kind of work and the biomedicine and your degree and etc.
So it's a really funny story, actually. It's not scientific at all, but actually when I was 16, I wanted to be a music journalist, and you know, we're going to pick our A-levels and stuff like that. And I had a dream, and usually you forget your dreams, but I woke up the next day and I just couldn't shake this name, Prince Xavier, spelled X-A-V-I-E-R, not like S-A-V-I-O-U-R, because that would be like quite Ponzi to be like, I dreamt I was a savior. It's not that at all. It was basically, I dreamt of this name. And I got to the evening and I just couldn't shake this name. So I sat down and I Googled it on the desktop. And I was scrolling and I found this guy in India called Prince Xavier, who had set up camps for thousands of people, merging biotechnology with traditional medicines. And this light just flooded through me, like completely over my being, like, this is going to be what I'm going to do with my life. So thankfully it happened just before A-levels, and I wanted to go down the scientific route, always wanted to bridge the gap between traditional knowledge and modern science, because I think the unity there could give so much healing. And then a couple of weeks later, I had a dream about another name, and I Googled it again, and it came up with all this propaganda against herbal medicine, saying it's all nonsense. There's quackery, they're dangerous, they say they can cure cancer, stupid hippies, blah, blah, blah. But I knew, I could feel that was just a warning. Gosh, I've found that to be true, that there's a lot against herbal medicines. But yeah, that's how the journey started. And then I chose to do biomedicine, human biology at uni. I wanted to get a scientific understanding of the body. Whilst I was at uni, I trained in massage therapy, Swedish massage. And I also, after uni, I did my diploma in hypnotherapy, because there is no health without the mind. And, you know, I went traveling, did all of that. And it was really funny when we were in the hostels, whenever I'd go to the shops, I would get like the herbs. And when we were in the hostels and people, you know, chilling or by the pool or whatever, I'd be there like trying to find the signal so I could look up on the scientific databases what these plants do. Obviously I had my fun as well, but then I did my master's in medicinal natural products and phytochemistry, which was incredible, one of the most awe-inspiring years of my life. It was at the School of Pharmacy at UCL, and learned how to put the plants in the labs, find the active compounds, learn about indigenous medicines, quality control, pharmacognosy, how it works in the body, ethnopharmacology, that beautiful science where scientists meet indigenous people and understand their knowledge. And yeah, then after that, I was an editor for a science journal, the Journal of Herbal Medicine, where it was basically my job to read the latest research, edit it and say this can be published or it can't be. Quite missed that job, actually. And yeah, now I am a researcher at Kew Gardens, researching ancient Greek medicines. I'm co-editor for an educational charity, Herbal Reality, which is a wonderful go-to resource for all things herbal education, whether you're a practitioner, a patient, member of the public or business, because I know you know how much noise there is online about plant medicines. So there's that. And then, of course, there's my business as the Plant Scientist, which I've created to bring herbal medicines to the people and herbal knowledge so they can empower themselves through nature-based medicines.
Wow, lots going on there. You've been busy.
bit too much, I must admit, but yeah, I've been busy.
Yeah, no, it's full on. I mean, we could dive into any of those topics and talk about that for the next hour. So it's like, what do I want to dive into most? It's the dream side of things. So initially, there's so much power in dreams, right? You know, the work that I've learned about, and like the collective unconscious, and dreams hold so much wisdom. It truly is the unconscious. And like, yes, we can pathologize it or really try and understand or get to the root of things, which we never will. We just never will. Things just cannot be explained. And that's just, you know, what we have to sometimes be at peace with. But the fact that your dreams led you to something so profound that sparked something within you is just so incredible.
Yeah. I feel so blessed. You know, so many of my friends just don't know what they want to do with their lives. And I've never, ever had that problem. And so it's like, on one half, yeah, I'm throwing myself into everything. I'm doing everything I can, and it can be really tiring. It's tough, you know, and being passionate about stuff, it's it's fire, and that fire needs to be maintained. But on the other hand, you know, some people don't know what they want to do. So it's, yeah, I feel very blessed, because also following that path has given me, I've watched my dreams come true over and over again. It's not just that I'm helping people with plant medicines. It's the joys it's actually given me, and the potentials, the research I can do, where I will be able to travel to native people and understand the way they connect with nature, or the fact that I'm sat in my apothecary now and I'm able to employ my mum, and she's doing a really nice job of blending teas and stuff like that, you know, and I'm able to sit and study and write, and also speak to other scientists, and all these things, like the fundamental things that make me happy as a person and give me joy and give me fulfillment are there in abundance in my career. And at the same time, it's generating medicines which are really helping people. You know, I've had people message me saying, I've been depressed for so long, I was having panic attacks every day, I'm not having panic attacks anymore, I've got my power back. Anxiety doesn't rule me anymore, I rule my anxiety. People saying to me that, you know, I know that love music, and they weren't able to dance for months because they've were depressed, and then they start taking these medicines, and they message me saying, Becca, I'm dancing again. You know, I get chills speaking about it, but it's just this beautiful ecology, because I listen to that dream, and because I'm in alignment, I get served, and hopefully more people on the earth get served as well. So yeah, it's funny how life works out sometimes. You can't always follow logic.
No, that's beautiful, and it fills me with just a powerful feeling of positivity when I hear about that story of, yeah, people coming to you and saying you've helped them essentially, and live a more meaningful life. Yeah, let's dive into that then. So I know all your work is it's kind of bridging this gap between medicinal plants, science, and then healing as a part of all that. What really differentiates like medicinal plants to non-medicinal? Maybe we could start there, and then of course we can go off into all these stories and what plants are healing people. Yeah,
that's such a good question. It's actually often debated between scientists and herbalists, because sometimes food is medicine and medicine is food. But what differentiates plants, making it so if something has there's foods which are nutritious, you know, they've got your vitamins and minerals and polyphenols and those sorts of things. And there's foods which are pharmacologically active and will actually have a specific effect on a specific part of your body. Also, it's the doses and extraction methods which you take it in. So, for example, sage, you can put it in your roast. But if you make a sage tincture and you have X amount of milliliters of it every week, that starts to have an effect on your brain, which increases the neurotransmission between your cells, increases your memory, all those sorts of things. So it's to do with the active compounds in it, the doses you take, the formats you take it in. And another thing that makes plants medicinal is these things called secondary metabolites. So you've got your primary metabolites, which are the chemicals that the plant makes for basic needs, so reproduction and growth and those sorts of things. And then you've got your secondary metabolites, and they are for killing diseases, bacteria, viruses. It basically gives its plants its superpowers. Those secondary metabolites are what are medicinal for us. It makes sense. You know, if something's antimicrobial for a plant, it'll be antimicrobial for us. And it's really interesting because there's organic plants or plants that are grown in the wild, plants that have had to fight on their own have far more secondary metabolites than plants which have had all the herbicides and pesticides and basically been coddled and had everything done for it.
Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes a hell of a lot of sense. So, for example, lavender, it actually grows better in these mountainous regions where there's not much nutrition in the soil, because it has to make it, not necessarily that it grows better, but it's more medicinal when we harvest it from there, because it's had to make things to fight the sun, solar radiation off, to make more nutrition for itself, because the soil doesn't have much, and it actually makes more potent medicine when it's grown in harsher conditions. And I'm sure you'll agree that it's the same thing for humans, you know.
Yeah, when we the learn hardier, to build... the stronger, sometimes often the more wise, have been through the most amount of just hard conditions.
Yeah, definitely. If they can alchemize it, if they alchemize it, mm-hmm. the secondary metabolite is wisdom.
There you go. Yeah, you see it in herbs that grow in the wild, like that you just cannot seem to match in your garden. That rosemary that's just thriving, exposed on the coast where we live, just in this bush, and it's everywhere. And then you're like, I'm trying to grow it in a pot, and I'm like, what is happening? It's just not growing. I'm giving it everything it needs. But you're right, it just gets coddled. And it's just like a huge statement, metaphor for what we're doing to most of the most of the plants that we are eating and consuming.
Definitely. And also, as well, a bit of a sidetrack, but as you can see, my life is very busy, and I got to the point where I was like, do you know what, I need to have a look at what's going on. So I started to look at the laws and principles in nature that make nature thrive, and apply it to my life. And this whole thing of resilience increases strength and wisdom, but also diversity. Diversity is how nature thrives. The more diverse something is, mm-hmm. The healthier it is. And sort of like with my career as well, sort of with healing, there's no one thing that's going to fix you. You need the diversity of different ingredients to help give you a healthy ecology, and also good communication. Nature's communication between each other is phenomenal, and that's something that's really fundamental for human relationships as well, which are an important part of well-being. So yeah, I like to think about that. Also the seasons and cyclical nature of things. There's just so many things in nature where if we reflect on them and apply them to our lives, it gives us a good framework so we can be well beings and just surrender to the fact that there's structures in place that we can live with that will help us be well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I've been reading finally The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, and initially talks about the kind of Darwinian idea that we've really bought into, to our detriment, that perpetuates separateness of like, it's all about the genes, and the genes are predictions of our lives essentially. And it's that individual kind of scope of the world, or which really like impacts, if our belief that is our genetics are so important, then we will live in that way, which is separate to everything else. But what's more important, as you know, new science is really tapping into, is the interconnectedness and the shared environment and everything, like the diversity which plays into that. It's just so much more important.
Definitely. And also with genes as well, you can have the genes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they will express and that you'll see them. There's this quote, which I'm not going to quote, I can't remember the exact thing, but it's basically saying that genes are the piano and the environment is the fingers which play the song. Mm-hmm. Any song can be played, but you can have all these genes in you and they might not necessarily be expressed. It's just a certain environment will force these genes to come out. So these healthy environments will help our healthier genes to express. Obviously, there's some which we can't control, but it just sort of seems like a scientific destiny. You know, it's sort of like a analog of that. Genes are just the be all and end all, but it's not necessarily the case. They're just a part of a complex picture, much like everything in nature.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the analogy in the book was the genes will be the key to the car. The key to the car doesn't control the car. It's the person in control of the key.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get back to kind of your work then. Plants within that. I mean, what do you say to people? Because this comes up it's come up a few times for me, and it's kind of like the whole one side of this, one side of that. But the protective layer that plants build, that can really, counteract how much nutrients you can get from it due to, and I guess this depends on what plant and what vegetable you might be consuming. But let's just sticking to plants, how can we really dive deeper into knowing like what plants are actually, yeah, bioavailable for us than ones that aren't?
This is a really good question. And this is why, yeah, old school herbalism. The herbalists who've been using this stuff for hundreds, if not thousands of years, know what percentage of alcohol to use, whether it needs to be a decoction, whether it needs to be a tea, whether it needs to be an overnight infusion, whether it should be a hydrosol. All of these things have been figured out by herbalists. And it's so funny because we try and charge forward with our science when really the herbalists are just like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
We've sorted this out. In fact, there's a really interesting case of this plant called kava. Have you heard of it?
Kava, no.
It's wonderful. Because I know you are interested in cannabis and psychedelics, and kava is this plant with a psychoactive effect. It's used in the Polynesian islands, I believe, and they use it in ceremony, and it's supposed to really relax you, make people feel good. It's really beautiful, and it can be helpful for sleep as well. And we found it and, you know, got obsessed with certain active compounds in it. So started basically the traditional extraction method is with water or maceration, where you chew it up and then, you know, you drink that. But that's, again, essentially that's water. We became obsessed with trying to get this one active compound up, because that's how our Western scientific mind works. It's the one active compound that's going to save the day.
We put it in supplements, right, and sell it at mass, and it's so different.
Exactly. And so we started extracting it with alcohol and all these different things, and not respecting the traditional extraction methods. And then eventually what happened is it started to give people liver damage, and they realized that, firstly, they put a blanket ban on it. You're not allowed on it here. You're not allowed it over here anymore, even though it's safe if you use the traditional extraction methods, because we did it wrong. We don't use it anymore. And then basically what happened is because they weren't using water, what it was doing was taking out this really essential antioxidant called glutathione. Mm-hmm. One of the strongest antioxidants in the liver, which can protect us from damage. And when they were extracting it in the new method, it was getting rid of the glutathione, so it was then going in and damaging the liver. Whereas if they respected the traditional extraction methods, it would have been fine, and we would have had more alternatives to alcohol, or, you know, or even just sitting in ceremony together, or something to help you sleep. So yeah, it's history is important. Herbalists know what they're doing.
And a lot of the time they might not know why they know, but it's like been passed down for so many years, and it's just like an intuitive sense, perhaps.
Very scientific. Like there's a myth that herbalism is not scientific. It really is. They look at the active compounds, not all herbalism. Like there's herbalism is vast and wide. You've got everything from witches to scientists in it, because it's all about nature, you know.
Yeah, it's a spectrum, right?
Definitely. But when I teach at Botanica School of Herbal Medicine, and I've seen at other universities that teach herbalism as well, it's very much you need to learn the chemistry of the plant to know which solvent it would actually be best in. So it's traditional knowledge has been validated by science. It's not just intuitive. But also sometimes it comes down to the basics of like roots and barks, which it's the active compounds are locked in there. You can't just leave it in a cup of hot water. You need to boil it up, give it a lot of heat, give it a lot of energy in order to be able to extract these things. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen with the medicinal mushroom craze, it's booming now, which is great, because it's medicinal mushrooms are powerful stuff, but they need a specific extraction method. And you go to, you know, a general shop and it will just have a ground up piece of chaga, and people put it in their porridge thinking, oh, this is good for me, but nothing, it's not doing anything for them, because it hasn't gone through an extraction method, and so none of the active compounds are bioavailable. But people getting into business don't know this. People getting into business just want a huge markup, so they'll just buy it, sell it on, and that's it. But a lot of people getting into the business as well are well-meaning, just not well-educated on it. So yeah, careful where you buy from.
Yeah, we'll get into the quality control and stuff
where would someone start then with all this stuff? Is it about really looking to, you know, some resources perhaps that you can mention and we can put in the descriptions and stuff at the for the podcast? But where would, because people listen to this, they're like, right, I'm so interested in this. This is really like changing perhaps my perspective on a few things. Where do I begin with understanding more about how to get certain benefits, health benefits from, say, mushrooms?
Yeah, well, it's a really good question. And this is part of the reason why Herbal Reality, the education charity, was set up, is because there's so much noise online, and it's either companies trying to sell you their products or these websites which are like, herbs are really dangerous, don't go near them, like Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is, firstly, check out Herbal Reality. There's a lot of really good grounded articles on there. There's also a short course at Botanica School of Herbal Medicines where it's a couple weeks, or even there's one which is over the weekend, teaches you home herbalism, what to use for your common colds, or, you know, if you've got period pains or whatever, and it'll teach you how to prepare the plants. And there's also a list of books which I will send to you after, which you can basically just look at the plant, it'll tell you exactly what it does, or look up an illness and it'll tell you what plants are good for it. But yeah, it's, yeah, good herbal books. You can't go wrong with those as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. So what plants have you seen the most benefits from, in that you, I know you've got some on your store that you've, you know, made into tinctures and teas and stuff. What any that you would just, you know, put your flag up for, like, this is what I would promote over and above anything else? Like, what have you seen the most effect?
Okay, that's a really good question. It's a hard one because obviously different, like, for me now, the hay fever.
But maybe for low mood anxiety perhaps, or low mood's an interesting one because it's there's so many nuances to it. But yeah, someone that's wants to just ground themselves, maybe the anxiety. Let's go there first.
Well, there's a couple I'd like to speak about, but they're both a type of plant which are called adaptogens. Mm-hmm. Now, let me contextualize this. In Western science, pharmaceutical science, they basically have one or a couple of active compounds which do all the work. And the difference with herbalism is that there's hundreds, if not thousands, of compounds in a plant extract which work on a myriad of different plants, parts of your body. And there's this plant category called adaptogens. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they will adapt specifically to you to help your body, your nervous system, your hormones to balance. So if you're really fatigued all the time, they can lift your energy up. Or if I'm really hyper and manic, they can help calm me down. And different ones of these plants have got their own little superpowers. But ashwagandha, you may have heard of, is super, super popular now. Mm-hmm. And that's an adaptogen that's specifically good for stress, anxiety, sleep. But because it's got hundreds, if not thousands, of molecules, it's actually really good for helping balance testosterone levels, and it can help a bit with immunity as well. And it's kind of difficult explaining this to some people sometimes, because we're used to one drug does one thing, whereas with plants, because it works on so many different parts of the body, it can actually do multiple things. Now, the way that ashwagandha works is our nervous system is what's responsible for our movement, but also our thoughts, memories, and emotions. The central nervous system is the brain and the spine. And when it fires too much, it's basically works by firing electricity. When it fires too much, get very anxious, very jittery, can't sleep. And there's this inbuilt mechanism, this inbuilt receptor called GABA receptors. When GABA receptors are stimulated, the electricity firing slows right down and we feel nice and calm, chilled out. Alcohol, for example, stimulates GABA receptors, which is why if too much is stimulated, we lose control of our movement and get clumsy, because our nervous system is in control of our movement as well. Now, ashwagandha stimulates these GABA receptors, And it also, so it calms us and chills us out. It helps with sleep latency, which is basically the period of time that it takes you to fall asleep. I can't remember the exact statistic, but it was something like, I can't actually remember the exact statistic, but a significant proportion of people in this study were falling asleep a lot faster. As you know, sleep is imperative for mental health. Mm-hmm. Another thing that it really is good at is when we're stressed, we release this hormone called cortisol and makes you forget everything. It's the reason why you can study for an exam, know exactly, you know, everything, you get in there, mind gone blank, can't remember anything. It's because you get a flush of cortisol because you're stressed. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that if you've had chronic periods of stress that you just can't remember anything. Ashwagandha has been shown to reduce that by over 30%. So it's really beautiful, potent stuff. I put it in my formulations for memory just because, okay, yeah, rosemary, sage, help with the enzymes that create new memories and stuff like that. And that's great. But if you're not getting to the root of the problem, which is your stress levels, sure, you're always going to be, you know, battling uphill. So that's one adaptogen, which I absolutely love. That's one of the ones where people have literally messaged me saying, I used to have panic attacks every day and I'm not anymore. It's really good stuff. And then the other one that I love is Rhodiola rosea, Arctic root. It's from Siberia. And the Russians actually used to give it to their cosmonauts when they sent them to space to help them deal with the emotional, physical and mental struggles of being up there. Builds our resilience up massively. Been shown in the workplace to increase productivity, increase concentration, all these sorts of things. It increases our VO2 max, and which is basically, in exercise, it increases people's capacity for exercise. Been given to Olympians and all sorts. And it also increases our serotonin levels because it's full of this molecule called 5-HTP. Which you may have heard of, yeah. As synthetic 5-HTP is sold in the shops because basically what it does is it's an ingredient that goes on to make serotonin or melatonin in the body. It's a precursor. Melatonin is what helps us with sleep, and serotonin is what makes us feel good, makes us feel sociable, makes us feel happy. 5-HTP is the base ingredient for that, and this plant is full of it. So again, like, I've had people message me saying it's really helping their energy, and then I've got a lot of people messaging me saying I'm sleeping deeper than ever, this stuff has really sorted me out. This is the one where people are messaging me saying I can dance again, I'm not feeling depressed anymore. And another thing that it does, the reason why it can help us with our energy levels, is because it basically, oxygen, there's this part of the cell called mitochondria, this little factory in the cell which smushes together oxygen and glucose to make energy. And rhodiola affects how we metabolize oxygen so we can actually create more energy. I just think it's magic that these completely natural plants can have all these beautiful effects on our body and can increase our quality of life. So we don't have to wait till we're at crisis point before we go to the doctors and they say, here's some Prozac. You know, there's things we can do, tools we can have in our toolkit, for periods of time which are stressful. And that's not to say there's anything wrong with Prozac. If that's your medicine, then crack on and all the best on your healing. People need what they need. But I just love these because, you know, rhodiola, I don't take it every day, but if I'm going through a period of time which is like, if I've got a lot of work or, you know, something's happened in my personal life or whatever, I have this tool in my toolkit that helps take the edges off and gives me my power back.
Yeah. And this has been happening since the dawn of time. Animals will go to certain leaves or you see, you know, dogs on a very simple level eating grass when they're not well. Exactly. And it's like there's something within there that's more intelligent than the dog. But yeah, not to simplify anything to a dog and eating grass. It's this intelligence that we can tap into. And it's amazing to hear about in your education with this. If astronauts taking it, I know people listening are like, yeah, sign me up. Astronauts are taking this to stay more connected at that. But it's fascinating. And I think now enters the conversation because I can just, we are, you know, we are but mortals and intelligent monkeys. So there's a part of us, it's like, oh, our kind of ears prick up when we hear certain things and we're like, oh, that sounds nice, that sounds easy, that sounds simple. And there's a part of us primitively that wants a quick fix for something. We are in that survivalist mode sometimes. But then enters the conversation, okay, how do I integrate after I've taken something, which is, you know, that for me is a big conversation, because you can go and take a medicinal plant in ceremony. We can talk about cannabis and psychedelics. But if we do that, it's like, that's 10% of the healing.
Yeah.
That the healing comes from that integration after. So you might be taking the tincture and then it's after, it's like, right, now that's grounded me, that's brought me back to a level I actually think clearly. And then now how do I heal from the thing that's causing the issue? So how do you navigate that ground with people when you're obviously selling some of these beautiful plants that you've put into tinctures and stuff?
It's a brilliant question. So there's two things that I want to say. I should have said this earlier as well, when you said about how do we start using herbs. We need to normalize seeing herbalists. They really, like, they know their stuff. And we've got this culture where it's like, okay, I don't want to take this pharmaceutical, let me just pop that in instead. When really what you need is a complete holistic map of what's going on in your life, physically, nutritionally, emotionally, and different plants for each one. And you can get a personalized formula and support throughout your healing journey.
So the only way this is sounding familiar for me is when I went to see an acupuncturist. And then we went through, like, you know, the session was an hour. First 40 minutes was all about what's going on with me. Let's look at the map of you in your life and what's happening, circumstance, environment, everything. And then diet and everything else. And then we'll do some physical work. But yeah, it's like, it needs to be so much more normalized, because there's so much more to it than just looking to something external. For healing.
Exactly. It's holistic, and we live in our bodies are complex systems and our environments are complex systems. And what I compare it to is, say you go to somewhere and poverty all around and there's loads of crime going on and people are really ill and stuff like that. You see one family and you give them 20 grand. Okay, that's good for that family, but is it sorting out the systems that are in place to help lift them long term into a better state? No. And sometimes, you know, firing all of these molecules at a single receptor in our body isn't necessarily what's going to lift us into a better state overall. It's a complex thing. And this is going back to what you're saying about integration. I think about this often. It is. You're better off having a weaker ceremony and a stronger integration than a really strong ceremony and no integration after. It's the ceremonies give you sight as to what could come into your life, but you building the bridge to get there is up to you, and that's what happens after. And
that's a great analogy. Yeah,
thank you. And you know, we live in a culture, that fast food culture, where one thing's going to sort out everything and it's going to get there really quickly, and it's simply not the case. And this is why it's
heavily conditioned, isn't it, that buy this and it's gonna be the answer.
Yeah,
it's like the central theme of so much in our culture, which is, you know, all about economy and buying and selling, and it's like such a theme that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, exactly. And this theme is, you know, it's the fundamental theme of capitalism, and we can't escape it. But and it's come into our healing as well. But yeah, when it comes to integration, it is very much I describe it as ecological healing, because there's many different facets, very many different nodes of us that need to be connected. So from a mental perspective, you need to be watching the language, you know, that you speak to yourself with. If you mess up, right, or you're doing something, say, for example, you binge eat. Every time you binge eat, you go, oh, I'm so freaking stupid, I'm so low, blah, blah, blah. You will continue to do that because you've trapped yourself in a negative language, right? So everything, so much is to do with language. It's also the consistency of overriding our nervous system and the patterns we've had for our whole life. Like our nervous systems, which what control our thoughts, our memories and emotions, are primed a certain way and they repeat it. And so we need to be consistent with our behaviors in order for those neuronal pathways to be strengthened. And we do that with language, repeated behavior, also things like breath work and regulating your nervous system. You can have all the herbs in the world. If you're not kind to yourself in your mind, and if you're not regulating your nervous system, there's only so far you're going to get. Mm-hmm. Nature, we fundamentally need time in nature. We are ill because of it. Nature deficit disorder is real. Sometimes you can think you're going absolutely nuts in life. You've done all the meditation, you've gone for the runs, all of that. And there's still this layer which you can't seem to shake off. But then you go to the woods and you feel like you're at home again. We're a part of that. Yeah, and I know earlier you said, oh, I don't mean to make it sound so small as a dog. No, we are. We are fundamentally a part of nature, much like the dogs are, or the ants are, or the clouds are, and it's our instinct to be amongst the trees. And so that is where a lot of our medicine lies. And that's why I love herbalism as well, because it's not simply a matter of take this plant, stimulate that receptor. It's a whole connective process where you're working with nature. If you're making your medicines, you're infusing it with love and intention, and that's super important as well. Also, journaling. I know everybody goes back to that, but if you can't untangle the thoughts in your mind and you can't understand them, then you will be not be able to move past them. It's literally, journaling is a mind massage, so you can get the knots out and move a clear track forward. And yeah, different people need different things. Some people like routine, some people like a morning ritual, all these different things. That's the beauty, and the difficult part of it is there is not a one size fits all policy. You know, you need to figure out what works for you. So for me, mantras, rubbish, don't do anything for me. Meditations where you do the sounds don't do anything for me. Visualizations do amazing for me though. Singing, you know, in groups and stuff like that, doesn't do it. It's like, it's nice, but I can't relax into it. Going out dancing, though, that is my medicine. Sometimes for me, medicine is going raving, many times in fact, because I need that joy to remember why life is worth it again. And I know that might sound a bit dark, but it's hard sometimes when everything's going on and it's chaos and it's chaos and it's chaos. So yeah, that's another thing that I think is really important as well, is that very easy to become zoomed in. You probably get this as well. What part can I better myself today? How can I improve myself today? How can I grow? And it's like, sometimes you just need to go out and have a giggle and smell the flowers and things that give you joy. Follow them. They're not a mistake. They're there to fill your heart up. And the things that give you peace, like I, in my bones recently, I know that I need to paint. I haven't painted in years, but I can feel that I need to paint. And I sat down and I painted, and it just took this layer off that no run or meditation could have given me. So if things give you peace and joy, do them, prioritize them, like your life depends on it, because they do, it does.
Beautifully put. That's phenomenal. It's amazing to hear someone who's done so much work in you know, in plant medicines and education around it, and is doing lots within that, but speak to life in this way. Like, they're the people I want to spend time with, because they're the people who are connected to the whole and not just sat in a room trying to figure out a problem, you know, and got this very, like, you know, I don't know what the right statement would be there, but what you've just said is such an amazing insight into how you live your life and what's important to you and why you're doing the work you're doing. Because it's always why. It's always why you do something. It's not. It's how you do something, but not generally what you're doing. It's why you're doing it. Yeah. So it's.
Thank you.
No, it's really important. It's really important. Like, I went for a beautiful 5-hour hike the other day, and I needed it. And I hadn't done that in years. And I needed to, there was this calling to do something just on my own that was challenging, and just to go off, you know, if I found a path, I'd go in the other direction. I was just very adamant that today I'm going to challenge myself physically, which ends up being emotionally, and then spiritually as well. And I just looked to the highest point and just headed there with no, you know, there was parts that I didn't know. You open that gate and you think, okay, I'm going to be coming back through this gate in a few hours, but am I? Like, who knows what's ahead? I don't know. And there was parts of the journey where I was just like, I could, yeah, who knows? It was challenging. I just couldn't, I couldn't get through it, but I did. And it was physically exhausting. But coming back, the elation that I felt doing that very simple primal, you know, adventure, whatever you want to call it, like, it was just incredibly healing for me in that moment. And again, taking away that layer from whatever it was that was preventing me from getting to in touch with myself or something that, yeah, something that is the next chapter to my life, perhaps, you know. So
yeah, that's really beautiful. It's really important to show ourselves that we can do hard things as well, and to create situations of safe adversity, so that when actual problems come in life, we're primed and we're strong and we're ready to do it. When I exercise, I like the way that it makes me feel in my mind that I am powerful. You know, even though I'm not that physically strong or anything like that, the fact my mind can push me to do that makes me feel invincible at times, you know, when I bother to exercise. But another thing as well is going back to it, you know, the fundamental question that I ask is, what the hell is a human and how do we get the most out of life, right? Because we are a very odd species. Life healing is so, so important, because life is so hard. It is so hard. But at the same time, it can be exquisite. It can be so beautiful, magical. We can love and feel all these amazing things. But if we do not learn how to heal, we don't get to experience those things as much, you know, and we suffer over and over again. Healing is a fundamental skill in life that we all need. I was speaking to my friend the other day. He did a magic mushroom ceremony. Well, it was just him, actually. He worked with a shaman. It was psilocybin. And he said he was there in the ceremony, like, he'd been blindfolded and stuff. And he was, he basically reached Nirvana, and he saw it, and it was people laughing and dancing and, you know, all of these things. And I just thought, and he was like, and it was heaven. And I just thought, people laughing and dancing, we do that here. Mm-hmm. We do that here. And it's just sent me like this. I've been thinking about it a lot recently. Heaven is here on earth. We just need to make space for it. And we need to prioritize those things that make us feel so blissful and happy and enjoy. But hell is here too. And so we need to have the strength to be able to navigate these situations, because it can be very heavy sometimes. And, you know, going out for a dance with your mates, plant medicines, going for that hike, that is how we build ourselves up so that we can experience as much heaven here as possible and be able to navigate hell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we live in that contrast, don't we? It's entirely possible to live in any which way, but it's within us all. It's like the energy systems that exist within us, the potential to do so much good and beauty, and then the potential to do so much evil and harm. And it's, yeah, it's alchemizing which one do you want to nurture, you know, which wolf do you want to feed. It's within us all, and the power of both are equally opposite, you know. There's I have this conversation lots of people, like, where does evil come from? Because the collective unconscious, if you can be born with certain things, yeah, you know, I feel it's entirely possible for people to be born with a inherent racism as a part of their you know, experience in the womb. I was talking about this last night with some people, and it's entirely possible that that is the collective unconscious like manifesting. And because my partner's just been at a conscious living festival in Bristol called Yes And, and they, you know, invited people from Indigenous tribes to come speak, and it's just profound that the healing that has to take place to really reshape these unconscious beliefs and this unconscious perhaps disposition to be not love and not good, because it's been up such a part of our history. So yeah, it's we're really tapping into these energies, and they're within us all. So which one do we want to do we want to, you know, bring forth and take into the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, it's what I love with nature and nature-based healing is it's we are intrinsically connected to nature. Mm-hmm. When we lose disconnection in the world, that for me is where evil comes from, when you can't comprehend the effects that something is having on another being or person or living system. And so when you do live with love for nature, and you actively thank it, and live with reverence for it and respect, that if you can respect a flower and thank a flower, that energy will carry with you through the rest of your relationships, and it helps keep your heart open. It's very, very easy. The easiest thing, in fact, when we're hurt is to close our heart off, harden it. And then that is where the devil's work comes out, to be honest. That's what I think, is when we harden our hearts and we lose our connection. So, yeah, it's just another wonderful facet of herbalism that, yeah, comes forward for me.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned plant ceremony, and what research are you aware of that's going on? Because I'll tell you a bit about my journey to acknowledge the power of, you know, the real mystical psychedelic power of certain plants and doing them with such intention, and then, you know, going off on my own doing my own ceremonies, mainly with psilocybin, not in this country, of course. But yeah, do my own ceremonies, and I always felt so much benefit, real deep introspection of doing it on my own. I haven't taken ayahuasca. It's something that's spoke to me for sure. I've never thought I want to seek it. It's never been something that, you know, 'cause it's obviously it's gained, you know, even touching on mainstream, like it's rare that I meet people that haven't heard of it, which says a lot. So it's doing a lot in so many different places in the world, but I must have heard about it, perhaps it was Joe Rogan, maybe 6-7 years ago. You know, podcasts were coming out and I was getting new information from people that had just no agenda, and it was just an amazing, I'd get amazing doses of just knowledge and just interesting information about certain things. So it's about 6 years ago when I was traveling, and it's kind of been always on the radar. I've not got around to doing it yet, but I know many people that have. And yeah, it's a really interesting one. And maybe we could just touch up on it slightly. What in terms of the research that's going on, maybe in terms of psychedelic research, like probably around the same time I was getting wind of like Tim Ferriss's work that he does with investing in MAPS, the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Drugs in America, their groundbreaking work and phase 3 trials of MDMA psychoassisted therapy, and all of that stuff that's coming out, which is just groundbreaking work that veterans and people that suffer with post-traumatic stress, which sheds just a different light than the story we've been told about drugs in, you know, in air quotes, because it's not drugs. Drugs is like saying food. it's just a catch-all term for so many different things. Mm. So yeah, I'm so interested in that side of things. But in terms of like the research, what are you noticing? Are you noticing that there's like a different energy around this now? People are talking about it more, or?
Well, it's a really interesting one, because it's going back to, well, so pharmaceutical science works by reducing everything down into its tiny parts, patenting it and that sort of thing. And psychedelics research, whilst I'm so grateful that pharmaceutical companies are looking at this stuff, because there's no way that this stuff could be normalized without the billions of pounds of investments and scientists talking about it all around the world and doctors listening to them and stuff like that. I don't necessarily agree with the drive to find the one active compound they can patent to make this money or whatever. I do have deep, deep reverence and respect for psychedelic medicines, the way they've been done traditionally. Mm-hmm. And the results speak for themselves. You know, with reductionist science, we've broken down depression and said to people, that's that receptor in your brain, you've not got enough serotonin, that's what's going wrong. When really it's a whole myriad of structures in your life and things going wrong in your body that are causing you to perpetually feel this way. And with psychedelics, you know, the problem with antidepressants is people can be on them for 30 years, never find happiness. And every time they go to the doctor and say, this isn't working for me, they'll up the dose. And this isn't to say that I don't have respect for pharmaceutical medicines. I do. But it's not the system like that. It doesn't always necessarily work. And I've spoken to countless people who have said, actually, my antidepressants made me worse because they made me numb to the fact that I was in an abusive relationship and that I needed to get rid of that. Mm. Or they actually made me a zombie. And yeah, I didn't feel pain, but I didn't feel joy either. Some people, you know, I was speaking to my friend the other day and she was like, I'm on antidepressants. I'm so happy. I feel amazing. Literally my life is sorted out and I was happy for her. It's great. With psychedelic medicines, what the results we're seeing is people who are chronically depressed, had depression for decades, tried every therapy under the sun, treatment resistant is what they're called, who are having psychedelics. And in one session, their depression is lifted. And what's remarkable about it is 6 months later, when you speak to them, they haven't gone back into remission. They're still well. Now, this isn't the case for every single person that takes it. As you know, there's a massive integration process that needs to take place. But time and time again, we are seeing that people are being lifted from the throes of addiction, PTSD, depression, eating disorders, all these different things. And I think the reason why is because this is what somebody described it as. They said, for the first time, I was able to actually step out and look at my problems rather than just be consumed in them, and they were able to get some objective view, which gave them their power back. It brings harmony to the heart, and that is what is needed. It re-enchants people with the world. The world is amazing. The world is actually incredible, but we're so zoomed in on our lives and our problems and our inboxes and stuff like that, that we lose reverence for everything that is around us. And psychedelics heart burst your heart open in order to be able to love that again and to be grateful for life and to realize that with the healing that we have within us. And so yeah, people, you know, they're saying that psychedelics could do for psychiatry what antibiotics did for medicine. Revolutionary. And I also am really grateful they're coming as well, because as you will know, there's loads of men who don't want to see a therapist. You know, they still find that emasculating. They haven't actually got the tools to be able to communicate their problems. They haven't got the language for it, nor the emotional makeup to be able to open up like that. They just don't, because they've had decades of being told not to do that.
It's re-triggering, it's re-stressing. Like, the situation to talk about your emotions is even more stressful than not, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Or it would be like someone giving me a bow and arrow and being like, right, go and shoot that tree up there. I wouldn't know what to do. I've never picked one up before. Like, there's literal lack of knowledge and practice in it. where psychedelics can help blokes who won't have other avenues. They might not even necessarily respect other avenues because they want to be the alpha male. They bloody need those mushrooms, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm grateful that they're there. I think they're going to help a hell of a lot of people. And it's not a cure-all that's going to fix everyone. There is going to be a lot of people that rely on mushrooms just to make them feel whole again without doing the work when they're sober again. You know, that's a part of it. There are some people who shouldn't touch them because, you know, if you've got schizophrenia and stuff like that, not great. And the reason I'm putting all this in there is because it's so easy to have rose tinted glasses on and be like, oh, it's going to save the world. Like, no, help a lot of it, but let's stay objective here. Mm-hmm. But for so many people, whether it can either bring them healing or the best time of their life, either is very important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that psychedelics are for everybody, but everybody is not for psychedelics, you know. And the age old setting is really important too.
Yeah, I think as well it's really important that not to just replace, okay, I'm not having that drug, let me chuck a mushroom in there. No, you need to create the container in order to have it. Regulate your nervous system before. Mm-hmm. Go with intention. Know exactly what you want and what you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. Don't just sort of do it and hope for the best. You know, you need to put structures in place in order for you to get the most out of it. It's not going to fix your life for you, but it will show you that you can do it for yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're speaking to about the identity, that what psychedelics can do, it can really separate you from, I guess, we call it the ego, but it's the self. It's the self that you believe you are. So it's that identity that you can separate yourself from and say, oh, I'm not that. I'm so much greater. And, you know, whether it's chemicals in the brain or something beyond that, the mystery around it is also encapsulating, because you're like, wow, there's so much more than I even, you know, thought or even have experienced before. And that's profound for some people. But I even think just the space that it creates, like remove the drug, the psychedelic, whatever you want to call it, but the space that you're in when you are in ceremony, maybe it's around a fire on the North Coast at a men's workshop, maybe it's going over to Peru, but the intention that surrounds that and the, you know, the conversations that surround that and everything, all of that, you know, fluff around the central thing, if you took that center thing out of it, it would still be an incredible space for healing. We talked about it on Emma's podcast, this like this physical letting go and release when in ceremony, that you know, you can just use that opportunity to just physically move in a way that your head's not involved and you're led by that. You're led by your heart.
Yeah. So important. And another thing, to be honest, because I haven't sat in ceremony with other people with psychedelics, but I have taken them in nature and I felt the soberest I've ever felt, because what was true was utterly clear. Standing amongst the trees, I can't tell you, like, I've never felt a sobriety like it, because it was very clear the nature of how things actually are. And I fell completely in love. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, amazing. I do want to touch on, before we wrap it up, the quality control and how we as consumers can really identify, you know, reputable brands, or you know, maybe it's a chance for you to plug your products, but like how we can really, and even for, I get perhaps for even for people interested in going into the market themselves, you know, creating products and where to source things ethically, sustainably, and all of that. I guess that you I think I saw somewhere you were writing an ebook on the kind of quality control.
Oh yeah, I wrote an ebook with my friend who's doing his PhD in plant quality control. But yeah, it's something I've worked in for a while, and the industry is a mess. It is a real mess, to the point where they did a study of 30, ginkgo biloba is a plant which increases blood flow to the brain. They're researching it for all sorts, from Alzheimer's to Parkinson's, and it's got, yeah, loads of wonderful effects. And they did a study of it, of 35 ginkgo products, all off the shelf in the UK. So I'm talking the big high street shops. And only 6 of them had any of the plant in. Only 2 of them were actually up to pharmacopeial medicinal standards. And, you know, some of them, some companies put dye in their products, so they will pass the lab tests. There was even a case, so bad, Kew Gardens, they were doing lab tests on certain medicinal plants. And one of the things you can do is test for the levels of active compounds. And they tested this plant and they were like, right, yeah, that, we know it's that, it's got the active compounds in. And it was only because a person came in who was a specialist in Chinese botany, mm-hmm. and came in, looked at the plant, and said it's definitely not that. What they realized, what this company had done, is they'd gone to the lengths of getting a false plant, dipping it in another tincture of the actual plant so they could send it to the lab and it would still pass. Herbal medicines, much like illicit drugs, where they take stuff out and put other stuff in order to weigh down the bag, essentially, is what happens. And when you have supply chains with 60 people in them, you mm-hmm. can't track where it's actually come from. You don't know who's taken a bit out and putting something else in. They've literally found actual, like, MDMA in weight loss tablets before. Like, it's crazy.
I don't think I wanted to know all this.
Yeah, it's a mess. And this is why, like, it upsets me, because you've got well-meaning people wanting to help do natural healthcare. They're taking something that's actually doing worse for them, or also they're taking it, it's not doing anything, and they think, oh God, well, I knew herbal medicines were nonsense. So it really sullies the whole industry. And it's not that everybody's getting into the industry as some pirate. There are pirates in there, you know, it's making so much money right now. But it's oftentimes just a lack of education. So there's fundamental things that I would look for. They have to be able to tell you where the plant has come from. If they can't tell you where the plant has come from, red flag, because you don't know where it's been. Things that are really good are things like Fair Wild, organic can show good quality control. And also, if you look at the packet and it's full of loads of fillers and bulking agents and chalk and stuff like that, it's really one of the things I've struggled with the most, is actually getting the right dose of the plant into a dose that the public will actually take. Because, you know, in Chinese medicine, sometimes they're using kilos of plants. And so if you've got a pill that's that big and there's 20 ingredients in there and only one of them is the plant, it doesn't make sense to me that you can actually get an active dose of a plant in there. And so, yeah, those are just a few pointers. My products as well are, I've got the ones, I've got the ashwagandha, I've got the rhodiola, I've got the tea for lymph health. I've got hay fever kit coming out. I've got mushrooms coming out. But what I'm formulating next is I'm basically zooming in on things like burnout, anxiety, depression, you know, joint health, all of these different things. I've got loads of things coming out in the mix, but they're basically products to help people enhance their quality of life so they can handle their day-to-day better instead of wait until we get to a crisis point. And yeah, I'm just really bloody excited to get them out, to be honest. And yeah, quality control is a minefield, but yeah, don't be shy to ask questions to who you're buying from, and careful of Amazon and stuff, because people can sell anything online. They really, really can. In those places, you can put anything in a bottle and just charge for it. So yeah,
absolutely. Any brands that you'd recommend for people?
Yeah, so obviously mine. but then Parker do wonderful work as well. Okay. I really, really like them. A. Vogel have got some really good stuff. Baldwin's have got some really good stuff.
What have you heard of Tree Harvest? They're no. quite big. Have you not? I was sending their website, a very like 90s website, but the amount of stuff on there is incredible. So maybe you could have a little quality control test on that. I mean, we've not chapped into foraging. I mean, of course you will be invited back on at some point, because I just
think
you're a wealth of knowledge and you've got lots of exciting things coming up as well. Just quickly on foraging, is there anything, I mean, the time is now, right? The seasons are changing and lots of things are coming into bloom, I guess. Is there anything in particular that is rife that you would recommend to people? I mean, I intended on doing local annuary, this thing. I don't think I was the first person to coin that, but I created the Instagram and I was like, right, I'm going to forage and I'm going to eat only UK produce in the month of January. After a couple of days, I was exhausted. Wasn't probably in the right mental place for it. So I just said, it's okay, I'll do it next year. So I'm going to plan ahead and I'm going to preserve and I'm going to, but it was so hard to get flavoring and without any prep and knowledge. And but I know it's out there. And one thing it did do for me was allow me to tap into what we see in the supermarket is minor in comparison to how much there is available in nature and what we can consume and what is good for us. But most people will go through their life thinking, we are living in the most abundant time in the human history. Look at all this produce in one place. But what it allowed me to do is just realize, wow, no, this is the stuff that's easily manufactured, mass produced, etc. So it was quite an interesting lens into a new world of foraging, which me and my partner are like very passionate about and want to learn so much more about.
I'm with you, and I eating seasonally and eating what's grown locally is just another wonderful way to connect with nature. It's insane that I'm getting strawberries from Tanzania in December, but that's another conversation. It's one of these things where you unconsciously for years I didn't even notice, and then recently I've just been like, this is actually not okay. But I'm actually not very good at foraging. People assume that I have knowledge on it, but my training was in biomedicine and in phytochemistry, so I sort of skipped the botany in the middle. I went from the body to the chemicals. And it's actually since working at Kew Gardens that I've realized actually these are skills I really need to build up. So I've done a few botany classes, I'm studying botany, I've booked on a course, I speak to my botany friends about it, but I'm not the expert when it comes to these things. Scientists really do not know everything.
Really? Yeah. Well, there's a great
shout out from the rooftops, honestly.
Well, that's good, you're honest, and that's the main thing. There's a few Instagram accounts that I can send your way. There's one, Forage by Fern, who's like,
I follow her.
If you follow it, phenomenal. I mean, it's very aesthetically pleasing. Don't know how accessible that is for lots of us to make it look that good, but yeah. All right, great. Well, I'm glad we left that to last, because there wasn't much to say. Good stuff. Okay, well, honestly, I appreciate your time so much, and we tapped into lots. And the real, I see you, and I see the work you're doing, and it's appreciated. So great that we can connect, and hopefully keep up the conversation.
Thank you, really, really beautiful way to start the day. I appreciate you giving me the time and space, so speak to you again soon.
Amazing. Did you want to point to people anywhere or anything you've got
So my website is Laz the Plant Scientist, L-A-Z. That's my Instagram as well. Do message me if there's any formulations you want to see, any workshops you want to see. I'm going to be teaching a lot more, bringing these plants to people, doing more workshops and stuff. And also Herbal Reality, amazing place for herbal education. That's not my company, I just work for it and really respect what's going on there. That's a great objective place to learn about all sorts of plants for different conditions, or the plants themselves, or quality control. And stay in touch, do say hello.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening all the way to the final curtain. Appreciate it. And send this to anyone who perhaps popped into your head and you feel would love to hear about the power of plants.
Thank you, and I'll speak to you soon.